Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome to the show. Welcome back to another Sunday night. Walking Dead just got more awesome. Season 7, episode 10, new best friends blew our minds, and we cannot wait to break the whole thing down for you guys. We'll see you in just 1 second.
You're so excited.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Should we be dancing with you, Ben? Yeah. I feel like we should leave you.
I'm in such a good mood.
Hey, guys. John's giving us no dance move love right now.
We usually talk about how we're going to start the show with each other. And then
impromptu, the John. Dance, you gotta be, you know, his spontaneous.
Dance, a little improv.
His dance is all in his laughter at me, but he was laughing with me, I hope.
Totally with you.
With you on that side of
yes.
It.
Yes. Exactly. Guys, welcome to the show. Welcome back to the AfterBuzz TV After Show for The Walking Dead. This is season 7, episode 10, New Best Friends. A massive improvement from last week, in my personal opinion. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed this episode.
I agree.
Had most of the things I love about The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
I was just generally like totally stoked, like fast-forwarding through the commercials. Like, this is so exciting.
Really
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Amazing. This has been the most inconsistent season of the show to date, and this episode just proves it. So, I loved it. I was so stoked. What do you guys think?
Are we going to say who we are?
We'll get there. Okay. I just want first impressions.
I'm all
Ben's
thrown
excited.
Off.
Don't take his moment right now, John.
I'm done.
John Carl, how'd you
it
feel?
It was a good damn episode. Okay?
I loved it. I loved the episode. It was so nice getting, seeing Rick as a hero again a little bit.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Loved it.
You know what? I did love it. I was telling them earlier in the show, or before the show, the music this time.
Yeah.
It was so dramatic and like 70s kind of old school horror meets some Drive, you know.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you were like, this is like Drive EDM meets,
and then
you couldn't finish the thought because you were still so excited
I was so excited about the music. It's so different from them, and it took it to another level to me.
It matches that. Junkyard.
It did. It
so
matched
well.
The junkyard.
Yeah.
Great episode.
So, guys, we've got the whole panel back in the house. This is the first episode we have Daryl back on the panel. Daryl Kristen, where can the folks find you?
At Daryl Kristen, DerrilKriston, and on Black Hollywood Live, our sister network.
And he's also in the chat room.
And he's in the chat room.
So let me know what you guys are thinking tonight, because I'm excited to be here and report all that stuff tonight.
Social media correspondent, Daryl.
Yeah, sorry. I want that title.
I missed you. It's been so long.
I'm so excited.
You guys can find me at Susanna_Kim, SusannaH_Kim.
I am the John Carl, THEJOHNCARLE, and I did my radio voice for that. And you can also find me on Whiskey and Waffles on YouTube.
And I'm Ben Bateman. You guys can find me at Ben Bateman Media. Let's keep freaking out about how cool the episode was. If you guys want to leave a comment or anything like that on iTunes, it would be very helpful for us. Give us a rating or review about how you feel about the podcast. It helps us stay high in the standings. And we provide free content here at AfterBuzz TV. We would like to continue to do that. And that's how we do it, if you guys give us a rating and a review. So that's awesome. You can find us on Twitter. We talked about that. And last but not least, at the end of the episode, we always do a little two-minute comic book-related spoiler section. We try to stay away from that stuff in the episode.
But I will actually say, this is 2 weeks in a row, especially this week. I don't think there's any comic book spoiler to even go to this time.
Yeah, it's true. There's pretty much nothing. We only give the heads up so that if you are a comic book fan and you wanted us to comment on something and you think we know, trust me, we're not missing it. We just try to stay away from it on the actual show.
And Ben, just to let you know, Tabitha Roadhouse agrees with you that this episode was better than the last one. So
excellent.
She's just as excited.
I kind of love Tabitha's last name.
Yes,
Roadhouse.
Yes,
yeah,
Dalton.
Like
Tabitha, yeah, great. All right, so this is The Walking Dead, and we start up with another like little barter situation where Negan has sent his crew to intimidate and take goods from Ezekiel and his crew. Richard kind of gets himself in some trouble, loses his gun.
I'm not going to lie, I kind of like Gavin a little bit from like of all the people that are in Negan's crew, he's kind of the most level-headed, where he's like, I'm gonna be a little bit of a jerk,
right,
but I'm not gonna take it to the extremes that some of the other generals, so to speak, would take it to. Jared, on the other hand, is a piece of crap.
Right, definitely.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't like either one of them, but, you know, I'll let you have that one.
I agree.
By comparison to the rest, he's not as big of a piece of trash.
Right. Of the saviors. I like Gavin because he seems so, like, nonchalant. He, like, talks like a normal freaking dude. Like, you know, I feel like right now we have a lot of people that just, they speak, like, from a different era, you know?
We're in
Georgia, you guys, you know?
Right,
and, like,
right.
Yeah, Gavin just talks like a regular dude. He's not super dramatic. I loved him.
He was also kind of reasonable because he's like, oh, the drop looks a little light, and they're like, look again, and he looked at you and goes, okay.
He's like, all
right. Right.
Yeah, he didn't give much argument.
Not like not like what you expected him to say. He's like, okay, it's all there. Now give us more. Like,
right.
That's like,
right,
you know,
yeah,
yeah, right?
Just being a dick.
The thing I really liked about that scene was that they're building towards this massive confrontation we're going to have. So we need to understand on a personal level where each person's rebellion comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And something that we've seen over and over again from Jeffrey Dean Morgan and from Stephen Ogg is they're these, like, way larger than life, I'm going to intimidate you and make you feel stupid and be super dramatic type of villains. And in moments, that's really good. But in situations like this, which is not like a, I'm going to kill one of your people, or I'm going to surprise you and take more than you thought, this is like a normal drop situation that happens every week or two. The guy's like, totally reasonable, except there's this one guy, this bully, who's just being a little bit too much. He's just pushing you a little too far in a situation that he absolutely does not need to.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the kind of situations that push people over the edge. And I think that that's it was a really important moment to see that, because it made me feel like, all right, I feel for these guys. I like really feel for them. Not like this is dramatic television, but like this is just a bully asserting himself too much. So I feel for this guy.
And even they knew that, because Gavin even told him, like, hey, you know, hold back a little bit, you know, stand down a little bit. So I like that. They show a little bit of, not empathy, but he is human.
There was restraint there.
Yeah,
on Gavin's part, there was definitely restraint.
Exactly.
Because, you know, I feel like if Gavin is going to turn into one of the better leaders on Negan's side, which who knows if they're going to get that deep with a character that's almost as throwaway as him.
Right.
But he should be like, dude, you can't keep coming to these drops and doing this,
because
these people are supplying us and we're keeping them in check. They're still giving us the stuff on time. If all you do is start beating up on somebody, that's when somebody's going to pull a gun, and then we're going to lose some of our own. We're going to lose our resources. Don't care about killing any of them, but you lose our resources, that's when I start to care.
That's true. Yeah.
It's also really good that they give us Gavin in that situation. I think for two reasons. One, I think on Negan's part, he's sending his less intimidating general to go make this drop because he knows he doesn't really get friction from Ezekiel.
Yeah.
But also because, like, the fact that Gavin is level-headed just highlights how unreasonable this other dude and his crew really is.
True.
And that it really does make you feel like, all right, I get where these guys are coming from. So I thought that was a brilliant scene. What do you think, Daryl?
It is. I mean, well, I'm going to report this from Ren Azinkburn, if I'm pronouncing it wrong, I apologize.
You're wrong, he and thinks he's going to hate you now.
Yeah, exactly. Just, you know, whatever. He thinks that at least one savior should have been killed, and they keep teasing, and nothing happens.
Right.
What do you guys think about that?
I think it's... I think the problem is, right now, if you kill a savior because of a confrontation like this, that starts the war. And I don't think Ezekiel, especially, is ready to start that war. I mean, that's the whole point of Richard's whole through line of this episode, is something needed to happen for Ezekiel to pull the trigger on his side.
Yeah.
And them killing a savior, all Ezekiel knows is if we have repercussions from that, we're going to lose our own people from it.
Right.
So I think that was too soon, respectfully.
Right. I feel that,
Yeah. Yeah, so that's pretty much how the scene ends, aside from the fact that Gavin does threaten and say, we can't have this, and if it keeps happening, he's the first one up. And he is referring to Benjamin there, right? Not Richard? He's referring
Richard.
To...
I thought it was Richard.
I got the sense that he was referring to Benjamin, because Benjamin throws his staff down and trips the dude, and...
And I got the impression it was Richard because
Richard.
Of the whole interaction of, like, hand over the gun and you know, that kind of stuff.
Right.
Benjamin got in the way, but he didn't do anything too over the top.
He was sort of stopping.
Yeah,
things.
he was kind of acting as
right,
like
a referee,
know, cooling
or,
it down kind of thing. I did love the quote of the episode for me was definitely Gavin going, "Read the goddamn room, Sensei."
Yeah,
I thought that was phenomenal.
Yeah, that was the best one of the best lines. Yeah,
yeah,
and we made it through a whole episode without anybody on the show dropping the S bomb.
Yeah,
and I'm
right.
not even going to say it here because they didn't say it on the show.
It's not necessary. Yeah,
yeah.
So, and Morgan loses his staff, which was definitely when you talk about like people are going to die. I think eventually Morgan is going to snap. It's going to happen.
It's a build up. I feel like it's like a slow build up with him.
Does it happen? Or I mean, this doesn't go into spoiler territory, but does he end up dying in the long term, keeping his conscience clean, too?
I think that's
another possibility.
I don't think so. I think Morgan snaps. Like, they took Eastman's stick, and somebody very important gave it to him.
Yeah,
so
that's
he
true.
Needs
right.
to get it back.
Yeah.
So, anyway,
the guy that locked him up in a cage for a few days.
Yeah. So, Richard loses his gun, and they return home, and of course, now Richard's all pissed off, and so he starts talking to Daryl, and Daryl's like, "Where'd you go? What's going on?" And this launches a plot point that I found. This was the one part of the episode that felt a little much for me, because they've definitely built up Richard. I understand his character, but I didn't ever understand his character to be this, like, ruthless. He's setting up he's Carol.
Like rebellious right now.
He's setting up Carol to just be straight murdered. Like, she's a person who was there on the premises for a couple days, and he's trying to set up this, like, kind of, like, this kind of, like, ridiculous plot. Like, it all has to go very, very, very particularly well, because he wants to get Ezekiel involved in this war. This was the only part that felt a little bit much for me. What did you guys think?
I mean, we don't know a lot about Richard's background, and I actually wrote it down when he was in the trailer and putting together the Molotovs and stuff like that. There was a backpack that had Katie on it, and I got the impression that somebody that he had lost was this Katie. So that's why he's like, you and me, we've all lost people. So I got the impression that, like, he's basically at his wit's end right now. He's lost whatever family he had and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And for him, you know, he sees drops being made to this one woman who is not contributing to their world. Mm-hmm. So if there has to be a sacrificial lamb, in his mind, it seems like she's a fair choice, because she's, unlike anybody else in the kingdom, she's not contributing in Richard's head, at least.
Right. Yeah, it wasn't so much that I didn't see where his logic was, but I think from the character point of view as an audience member, it felt very drastic. Like,
we didn't see the transition from another episodes of that.
The switch really flipped quickly.
I agree.
A hothead is different than someone who's just like, I'm going to formulate this really articulate plan that just throws someone under the bus to get murdered, and then hope that it triggers my boss to retaliate and start a war.
Yeah.
That's a lot. It's assuming a lot.
The piece of it that was a little surprising to me was they got to the point where they got to the edge of that that trailer, and he hadn't filled in Daryl on the full plan yet. That was the only part that was a little weird to me.
Like, you're kind of like, Daryl, wouldn't you want to know all the details before leaving and like going with him? I kind of thought Daryl would have.
I mean, from a storytelling perspective, I accepted it, though, because having that confrontation as the saviors are driving by is much better from a dramatic standpoint.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Yeah.
And, I love the build as Daryl's finding out who he's talking about.
Yes.
And it was great, too, because at that moment you knew you were going to get a Carol-Daryl reunion.
Mm-hmm. Why are you laughing at me?
Because I was half watching the screen and half watching you when that
my
was
my reaction to that?
Because you're like, So for people who don't know, when we're watching the show, there are like 8 other TVs going with other people watching their respective shows, and one of the producers here asked us, please don't be loud with any of your reactions and stuff, because they're not watching it at the same time we are, and they didn't want to spoil it. And I just watched Daryl, and you're just like, you're just watching, and you're like, it's Carol. Just say it's Carol.
And I had a real dramatic moment. I'm sorry.
No, it was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. It highlights something really important, which is that there's only a few relationships on this show that lead to like literal fist pump moments, like ones that mean so much and have meant so much for so long, mm-hmm. and they've done so well that when you do get those reunions, they mean so much. And just him talking about her without even saying her name leading up to it, because you could feel her reunion was going to come.
Yeah.
It was such a satisfying moment. Yeah. And then I love when he's just like, anything happens to her. I mean, anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I will kill you.
I'll kill you. Straight up.
The way he wrote that whole sequence, too, because he kept asking. He's sort of like ignoring him and asking again. It's like that built that anxiety a little bit. Oh,
it's
amazing.
It's like beyond the stupid interaction we just had, beyond your crazy plan, I'm just telling you right now, I don't even care. Yeah. I'll walk out in front of that car for Carol.
I'm gonna
you will die.
Yeah.
You know, like,
well, the funny thing is, I don't know, I had a moment where I was like, I kind of want them to make out right now. I kind of want this to happen. I kind of want this to happen.
Not Daryl and Richard.
No, Carol.
And Richard, yeah, right.
Daryl and Carol. Right. Jesus.
Right. We're clarifying for the
audience. Daryl and Carol.
I don't know where you were going with that.
No, Daryl and Carol.
Daryl took a time jump there.
Yeah. We knew because we were watching with him, so
Because literally during it, he's going, make out, just make out.
Oh, not those two, no.
The next part.
But back to the trailer.
Yeah. So, so that's pretty much the way that scene ends up. They head back to Alexandria, and that's...
I did love the over-the-top imagery. If you look at the side of the trailer, it had a stagecoach robbery painted on the side of it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, okay, I get what Richard was doing, and it's essentially him trying to be like, this is the Wild West, and this is what my plan is. And I'm like, oh, they're really just going to hit us over the head with that image right now.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
And then it didn't happen, which actually made me like it even more.
So before we continue down the road with Carol, let's jump over to the junkyard.
Yep.
Because, like, this is the part of it for me where I was like, this is a show about the zombie apocalypse.
Right.
And it's based on a comic book, and it has some comic booky elements. And this community was very comic booky. Mm-hmm. Like, we've had a couple years now where we've been in post-apocalyptic world, and, like, she's got her own like language, mm-hmm. and they've like yeah. there's like they, so, there's like an articulate circle when they walk in, mm-hmm. and they're all wearing black. There was like a couple dudes that were abnormally tall. Did you guys
yes.
notice
yeah.
that?
Yeah. Super tall. That was one of the things we noticed.
There's
yeah.
one dude who was yeah. walking out of the storage container and was almost hitting his head. He was massive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The first one, I saw one, and I was like, that must be like the 7 foot AD or like you know yeah. PA who was like, can I get in? And they're like, yeah, put him in the shot. Yeah,
and then
yeah.
there were more.
But then there was another one who was yeah. like 7 feet tall. I was yeah. like, something. Maybe they recruited really tall people.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Specific casting. Yeah.
Yeah, or something. Or they run like a basketball game in the junkyard we don't know about. And those guys play centers yeah. or something. Yes. Anyway, so there's a they all line up in there in the junkyard, and there's like this sweet articulate circle.
It was a double circle. That was the interesting
yeah,
part.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because when they all walked in, and then like they didn't just walk in and just go right into the circle. Like they were crisscrossing, and then it just mm-hmm. ended up in a circle. And it was like, this is like some weird OCD stuff going
yeah.
on right now.
Yeah.
It was
very
weird how they went
mm-hmm.
in.
And it was very Mad Max to me. I don't yeah. know. It's yes. giving me that totally. Mad Max feel. You know?
Completely. And I didn't write her name down. Is it like, was it Jaina?
Jadis.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, she's got the sweet bangs and like really, she's like, yeah. yeah she, anyway, so.
What did you say?
Mila.
Yeah, Mila Jovovich combined with Mad Max.
Mad Max, yeah.
It's straight Resident Evil, 100%.
Absolutely.
So they all like do this like circle move, and it's this whole like, give us what you have, you owe us your life, do you want to buy it back, right? This whole like barter thing's happening. I want to see Gabriel. So Gabriel comes out, and I really like the use of Gabriel in this episode. I thought it was nice. I thought like Rick's. I know you hate Gabriel.
I'm really trying with him. You know, tonight was a good episode for him. I'll say that.
All right. So
I give credit where it's due.
I like seeing the father and wife beater. Like,
yeah, yeah, it's good. So this whole conversation happens, and there's like a little bit of an altercation because they're making demands, and the junkyard folk. We don't have a name for their community yet, right?
Nope, junkyard folk works.
Yeah. Junkyard folk. And just for the record,
Tanya are their Vulcans. So
yeah,
Vulcans.
Yeah, okay.
Based on her haircut, yes.
Yes.
Couple things to point out. One, we said this last week on the show, and anybody who was watching it. Our TVs out here have really, really extreme glare sometimes. Sometimes the lighting is really crazy.
We literally made sure our bulb wasn't on to watch the episode.
So last week, we legitimately watched it, rewound it, watched it, and did not see the second person in the car with Father Gabriel. We just didn't see it. So some people called it out, and like, I'm sorry, we like just didn't see it. We had no idea that was the thing. So missed
seeing the gifts when I got home, I was like, I tagged everybody in it. And I was like,
obvious.
It sucked that we missed it because it would have totally changed our perception of what Father Gabriel did. And it actually made the theory that Roxy read, the one that she had off of UpRock, made a lot more sense.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm.
Because it was like, oh, okay, he looked like he was just running away, but when you know there's somebody else in the car with him, that totally changed it. So
completely.
We do apologize for not seeing that.
Absolutely. And then the other thing I was going to say is I saw in a couple reviews online, people had the same assumption I had, which is that when you first see the junkyard folk, there's a bunch of women who look a little bit similar to the women at Oceanside.
They
and
are.
That was, I was confused. When I first saw them, I thought maybe it was Oceanside. So.
According to Give Me Shelter, they're called the Scavengers.
Okay.
The Scavengers.
So, just so you know.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a fitting name.
They take,
like
they don't bother.
Right.
Right, so after we have this whole conversation where, you know, we don't bother, they're like, all right, Rick, you know, you've said that you can get us whatever you want, because Gabriel steps up and actually, like, takes some responsibility, steals the knife, goes, and then she's like, take Rick to the up.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, what is the up?
So the Target brand mountain.
Yeah, something.
Right.
And then my favorite part of the whole episode happens. And they throw Rick into basically the Sarlacc pit, except it's like really the Rancor challenge from Jedi. And he has to like fight the Rancor,
basically. That's very true.
That was the first image that I was like.
How did you make this nerdier?
What?
No, that was a great reference, though.
And then you went nerdier.
It's not really the Sarlacc pit, except that it's like a junkyard, so it feels like it. But
it felt like it.
He has to defeat the Rancor, and he does. I was like, where's the bone? He's got to find the bone. And he kind of finds the bone in some ways.
It was a weird choice for me that he put his hand right through the spike.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking, like, and again, it's easy for us to say this because we're not literally with our lives on the line. I'm looking at him, I'm like, wouldn't you just try to, like, take the two points and twist it or something like that? Instead of throwing your hand right in one of the spots where there was a spike?
Well, you're having to think pretty quickly.
Yeah, you got to be quick on your toes, you know.
Okay,
so
maybe,
I could see him kind
I'm quicker than Rick, I'm sorry.
Yeah, maybe, you know, you're doing some Super Jedi stuff, but I would say that... probably he was just, the reaction was to keep that thing from coming to his face.
And he just had unlucky aim.
And he had unlucky aim, yes.
Yeah, there was like definitely a couple moves that I was thinking that Rick might have gone for over that. Like, I was thinking, like, you got to be faster than it. So you get behind it, you go for a knee, you try to take out one of its legs. Like, that's what I was thinking.
The one thing I wanted to see happen out of that fight scene is they had that computer that he, like, starts pulling
you
out.
I wanted
to see the full-on computer up over the head. Even if it did no damage to it because it had the helmet on. It also, the fact that its name was Winslow was phenomenal.
Was it Winslow or Winston?
Winslow.
It was Winslow. Okay.
Winslow, yeah.
Yeah. But I wanted that computer just to smash over its head.
I loved, like, I'm going to go even nerdier because I think I said it last week, but it was the Rancor fight, but it looked like the mouth of Sauron from the cut scenes in Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
Wow. Right? It looked just like the thing that comes out from the gates.
You're right.
And it's got the crazy teeth.
Yeah.
Any Lord of the Rings fan knows what I'm talking about. It really looked a lot like it.
So. I don't disagree.
Yeah. Anyway.
You're still a bigger nerd than me, though.
Yeah.
But I love that Michonne kind of saved the day with Rick. You know,
right.
She kind of gave him the direction on, like, pull the garbage down, basically.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right.
For a second, I saw a mattress there. I would love to have seen them, like, you know, pummel him with mattress, so he's kind of stuck in there with his spikes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was kind of surprised to see Rick a little flustered and not as quick on his toes. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, that's not normal Rick.
Right. He did get pushed in there with no preparation.
True.
Yeah.
So. I mean, true. He's caught off guard.
He's beat up. His leg's cut. Mm-hmm. He's like, I mean, that would suck. So anyway,
my first reaction is, oh, that's gonna get infected.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's what you said.
Like, it's not like it's just something sharp. It's not like it's just something by a walker. It's something sharp by a walker that's in a literal pile of garbage.
Yeah, you're in a junkyard.
You're literally where germs live.
Well, Katie Snow agrees with you. She said Rick needs a tetanus shot.
Also a Tetris shot.
Tetris, yes, sorry.
Was anyone else thinking the entire time, like, what must this place smell like? You're all sleeping in garbage. You're when Rick is up on the up, and he's looking around, and you're seeing all of those pathways.
Yeah.
I think we're to assume that those are like some homes, right? Like they're
like those are streets, essentially. Yeah.
Yeah, and people are living in those piles of garbage.
I agree. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I agree, but they also are living in the land of the dead, so I don't know which smell would be worse.
Yeah.
Garbage or dead, rotten flesh.
Yeah, you know? It's like you kind of go back to like what the medieval times were, and it's like, pretty much unless you were royal, everything smelled terrible.
Yeah. Mm.
No.
That's what I feel like, maybe.
The top of Rick at the up is actually the literal only complaint I had for this episode.
Because the CGI?
The CGI, when it was him with everything behind him,
it
was not good CGI.
It wasn't good,
But everything else, like the whole setup, and we were talking about it when it was that that lingering overhead shot before everybody entered into the circle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're like, oh, this set looks phenomenal.
So
and I just feel like that CGI, I get why they had to show the scale of it, but that was the one time where it actually pulled me out just a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I am curious, though. I think it was probably CGI.
It was definitely CGI.
Yeah.
But I will say that sometimes in situations with the depth of a shot like that, it will be real and look like CGI. Just some the staging sometimes does that. And I've worked enough in video and I've shot enough things to know that occasionally it just kind of happens that way.
Mm-hmm.
Depth will create a really weird illusion where somebody's head is too clear if they're in the foreground. So I'd be curious to know, because this show has no shortage of budget. They can spend as much money as they want.
Well, they had to spend CGI on the tiger as well. So.
Yeah.
So,
the tiger this week was better.
Yeah. Back to a little bit, just really a quick note for Jadis. Wolf and Thief said that she gets a Fifth Element vibe to her.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other great hairstyle from Mila.
That.
So, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, 100%. She looks just like Mila.
She really does.
She really does. She gave the whole delivery like her, too, you know, a little bit.
So, can somebody just cast the two of them into a scene together
from, who's the girl from Run Lola Run? That's a different girl.
Yeah, that's a different girl.
But
yeah,
she
they have that similar
look. She
kind of
looks
look.
Eastern European a little bit.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah, right. all right, anyway, so... and they also kind of look like Franka Potente from Born Identity. Yeah, so anyway.
That's very true.
Moving on from the Rancor Challenge and the sweet, sweet hole. So Rick gets out, and basically it's like, all right, you get us jars and guns, and we've got a deal, and then there's the barter. I do kind of wonder, like, where did all of the organization of the junkyard folk come from? Like, that's what the scavengers. I want to know this because, like, okay, was there a rehearsal for the circles? When did canned food start being, like, just jars? It's like when in Men in Black, like sugar water. It's like, I feel like that's how they talk a little bit.
right.
Yeah. In some ways.
Yeah, I think it was just, she just has this really strong personality, and she just, whipped people into shape, and mm-hmm. as the world's falling apart, you just say smaller words because it's easier to understand.
Well, I definitely want to see a backstory on her. You know yeah. what I mean? Like, ooh, yeah. I want to see what she's all about.
I hope mm-hmm. we do get some of that. And that will be one note at the end of the episode Fair. That we want to talk about because it reminds me of something else.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I would agree on that.
I love that we found out that she knew about the boat and all the food that was yeah. on. That was amazing.
She's like, oh,
that's
yeah, we
great.
Were waiting for a while
yeah, yeah,
for
awesome.
Someone to do it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, what do you guys think about the philosophy of we take, we don't bother?
I mean, they already broke it.
Right.
Because the Father Gabriel thing, if the person got caught and didn't run off, then they did bother.
Right.
That's true. I mean, that's true.
Yeah, when they say we don't bother, like, does that mean, like, we don't have to work for things? Like,
no,
we
I think,
don't
I
mess
think
things
it's,
up?
I think it's they go into somewhere and they kind of want to make it out without people knowing they were there in the first place.
Right.
Like, they don't want to leave a trail mm-hmm. to back to them.
They just want it to be given to them. And they can yeah. leave with a clean cut.
Yeah, I do. Well, the other thing I do kind of wonder is, like, let's just say you're in a situation like this, a post-apocalyptic situation where society kind of falls apart, and somebody does step up and become a leader. So you have a Negan, because this whole season has really been about highlighting all the different forms of leadership,
yeah,
right?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you decide that you're going to, instead of going the Rick route of being yep. sort of a mm-hmm. traditional normal person with, like, regular people morals, that you're going to, like, have everyone dress in black, and you're going to, you yep. know, have all this, like, crazy lingo and live in a junkyard.
Or you intimidate people with yeah. a tiger, or you intimidate people with a barbed wire baseball yeah. bat.
How long does it take, I wonder, for people to sort of, like, fall in line with your cult behavior once society crumbles?
Like, I feel like it's got to be easier to make people fall in line when society crumbles mm-hmm. than when, like, real times, like...
Yeah, like, you wonder, yeah. it's like, if yeah. somebody is really buying in, and they do it, and 30 days passes, and you're living in their camp, after 30 days, are you just sold on that's the way things are now?
If you're getting fed every day, and, no, right. and you're
yeah,
not,
and
people
and
aren't getting
protected.
Killed on a regular
yeah.
basis,
I, and I would
yeah.
say that that's what people are starving for. They're starving for, like, family, because mm-hmm. so many people have lost their families, you yeah. know? So I think that anyone who is a leader who can offer that to them, and a lot more, they're willing to yeah. just mm-hmm. give their all to just do it.
I agree on that.
Their options are so slim.
Yeah.
One really interesting comment in this episode, and I was 50-50 on how I felt about it, is in the initial interaction, the character in from the kingdom with the bow and arrow who says that my sister had a dress like that.
Diane.
Yeah. Oh, Diane. Yep.
And then it ends and she says, yeah, my sister loved that dress. It kind of reminded me of the previous week when Rosita has the line, the tag, where she's like, I knew that bomb didn't look right. But it didn't bother me in the same way.
Well, the problem that we had with a lot of that episode was the directing where... like, even the music, it felt hokey, and, yep. like, that line yep. felt hokey. This was, I think, just showing that this girl was just so bothered because it reminded her of her lost sister.
Yeah.
Whereas the other one was just kind of, like, wink, 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 nod to the camera kind of thing.
It was the setup and the payoff, I mean, yeah. from mm-hmm. from a scene, from, like, in a similar type of scene, yep. right? And so that's what I'm saying. It didn't really bother me this time, but... I thought that was really interesting that she said my sister had a dress like that, and Ezekiel says don't think about it.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, because yeah. everybody must see reminders every single day of the 50 people in their lives they used to know that they lost, and some scale of like importance and emotional connection, yep. starting with your parents to your children,
absolutely.
To mm-hmm. your you know like your best friend to your work associates, like all these people you must see people all the time that remind you like, oh yeah, that person's dead. Yep, they're gone. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, they had that backpack. Oh, they really liked that song. Like. And we don't see those scenes very often because it's so far down the line in this world.
That's true. Mm-hmm. And I'm also finding, when you mentioned a little bit about Rosita, how she's becoming so cynical and bitter. You know, mm-hmm. each episode, she's getting more and more bitter. You
yeah.
know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. she's almost becoming, you feel like, a loose cannon a little bit. Like, at any mm-hmm. moment, she could kind of erupt and just...
Kind of like what was happening to Sasha last season.
Very similar, yeah.
Let's touch on Rosita for a second here, because the scene in the junkyard ends, and there's a conversation about what's next. So yep. Rick has a spike through his hand. They want to go and get back to Alexandria and fix him up a little bit.
Yep.
And
drop off the supplies.
Yeah. But Rosita's like, I want to just go out there. And they're really doing something weird with Rosita's character right now. That it's the only character in the show that is like, you guys made a really concerted decision to just like make her the least likable person in the entire Walking Dead universe.
Yeah.
She's less likable right now than like Dwight, than like anybody. I mean, she is actually one note, just like, what's the point of this? What are you guys going to do? Does she have to have a breaking point? Is she supposed to come back from this? Is she going to be redeemed and then die? Is she just going to die? Like, what do you guys think? It's totally strange.
I mean, she kind of had that rogue attitude when she was making her own bullet and doing that stuff, so it wouldn't surprise me to see her go back to that mentality.
Mm-hmm.
and have it be her demise in a way. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if she were gone at the end of the season.
I think she already hit her breaking point. I mean, everything that happened before the mid-season finale, that to get her to be like, I'm making my own bullet and everything like that, she already broke. The second the bat went to Abraham's head, she broke.
Yeah.
And now we're just seeing the continuation of that break.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the part about her is, you know, as you're saying, she's like one of the least likable characters. I think she doesn't care anymore, so she has no reason to put on the fake smile that other people still put on.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I think that will be something that's going to be a problem for her later. I think that she's going to be, become more rebellious against the group, and that will trigger something where it's going to be the demise
she'll
of her, for sure.
Trouble.
Yeah.
I mean, she has an angry attitude against stuff, but, I mean, like, there are other people. Like, I'm still bothered more by Morgan than I am by her.
Oh, really?
Mm. Yeah.
That's interesting. I used to be really bothered by Morgan. They're doing a one-note thing with her right now, and it's been going on a little long for my taste. We'll see how it rebounds, but I just thought that was really interesting. Again, another episode where she just gets even colder, even more. I mean, she had the line with Sasha last week.
Right.
Yeah. She had the line with Tara this week.
I mean, I'd be interested to see her get, like, so broken to the point where she sort of, like, sacrifices herself or, you know, like, martyrs herself. You know, she's just so over it, and she just, you know, I would like to see that.
You do also wonder, she seems so intent on killing Negan. That seems like her sole goal.
Yep.
So even if she took herself out, you know,
I think
she'd be okay with that.
I kind of wonder why.
She blew it.
Yeah, well,
that's the problem. She
she tried.
You had one shot, and you blew it. Like, if your sole goal is to do any one thing and you have that chance, she pulled the trigger, and she didn't do it.
Right.
So it's like, I mean, she's even further broken inside of herself because she knows she messed that up. That wasn't the bat's fault for stopping it.
No.
She didn't get the shot off.
Yeah, the other thing I was wondering is, like, she seems to be pretty smart and aware of the fact that Negan has this penchant for pretty women and that she could have probably gotten into camp and, like, gotten in that way and then tried to take him out. And
wife number five or something?
Yeah, I'm sort of curious why she never even considered that. It seems like, I mean, it seems too disgusted at this point, but that would have struck me as, like, the easiest way to get in and have a shot to kill him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't think he would buy any of the girls that were there when the reckoning that happened against Glenn and all them. I don't think he would ever buy into one of those women switching sides on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're not too far from it there. So let's get back to the kingdom and what's going on there. We have, first of all, Carol is in her house, and Ezekiel comes by with our boy, the best character in the whole show right now.
He's an idiot.
Oh, he's hilarious.
He's an idiot. I love him, but he's freaking idiot.
He's the best.
He's the
I don't have his name written down in front
Jerry.
Of me. Jerry. Yeah,
Jerry.
Yeah.
Jerry the jester.
Jerry is the tits right now. Jerry's my favorite. What does he say? Like, you're sick with a stick, son, or something like that?
He's sick with a stick.
He's great. But so Jerry brings Cobbler
Such
to Carol.
An idiot.
And Ezekiel's trying to, like, sort of creep around, claim he doesn't want to see, bother Carol. But clearly he's trying to get her attention.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, you open the door. And she's like, well, yeah, you set my wire off. I'm going to open the door and see who's out there.
And she's like, get out of here. And after that whole interaction, which is, like, not much to it, really, we get another knock on the door, and this was the moment of the episode.
This is when Daryl started yelling kiss.
This is where I started yelling kiss. No, it was a great scene. It was actually one of my favorite scenes in Walking Dead. It was very dramatic, and just I felt the love between the missed love.
Yeah.
Whether that's mother son, whether that's something else, whatever. I felt the love in that scene between the two.
It was genuinely a heartfelt moment.
Say anything at all.
Does anybody know the specific age difference between those two characters? And if anybody in the chat
knows
this, I'm
gonna give 15 years. Is it her asking?
I feel like Daryl's supposed to probably be like 38, would be my guess. 36.
I don't know. He's grizzled as hell for like 30s.
I don't think he's supposed to be living a rough life.
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, I'm gonna give him a little bit of credit.
I think he's been fighting zombies for about six years.
Yeah. I think he's supposed to be about 38 at this point. 37.
He looked rough when it all started.
Yeah, and I think
he's always looked rough.
And I think that probably Carol is supposed to be like 50, right around there.
Which is weird to me because she had a daughter who was like 10. Like,
yeah.
Sophia was, what, like 8 to 10 or something like that?
Maybe she's supposed to be, like, 45 or something like that.
I mean, they're not
that far.
I'm going
to guess, like, 45.
They're not that far apart in age,
no.
I think, is the big takeaway.
I don't think so either. And I also just love, though, that, like, they teased us early on, like, season 2 and 3, I want to say, with that relationship being kind of romantic. And they never went down that road. And I think it's pretty commendable, and one of the nicer things in the show is that they've kept that relationship to be, like, it's never really gone there. It's just the purest, most, like, just, like, you're, like, in some way sort of, like, my soulmate that understands me in this zombie world. And, yeah, the payoff tonight was amazing. It was, like, a really, really well-earned reunion. And Yeah, I got a little emotional. I don't know. I loved it.
It was really weird when you saw not just the seeing them together for the first time, but when they're sitting there by the fire and
great scene too.
He decided to lie to her, and
yeah,
I was so surprised by that.
I get it, but damn, that's a huge, huge move for Daryl to do that.
Yeah,
that's gigantic because he's never lied to her.
Yeah,
no, he hasn't. Yeah,
that was a very conscious decision.
Absolutely,
because it went to what you saw later with Daryl and Morgan, where it's like you chose not to tell her that because you knew if you did, she'd be the first one to start shooting.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing: I also think he just wants her to be safe. Yeah. Like she's content in her place. Leave her there. I want her to be safe.
Spoiler alert. I'm just kidding. I don't have any spoilers. She's probably going to kill everyone anyway. But
Oh, and the question you guys are asking about Daryl and Carol, most people are saying 3 years. I don't know. It feels like a bigger gap than that.
I believe that.
People are saying 3 years.
If they kind of think about Merle. Merle's his older brother. Merle was probably like 46, 45 is always what I assumed. And he didn't look like he was that much older. He wasn't supposed to come off as that much older.
I thought there was like a 10-year difference between the two.
I definitely would say closer.
Yeah. I guess if Melissa McBride and the show was supposed to be about 44 and Daryl was supposed to be like 41.
Maybe.
I could see it. It's a little bit of a stretch for me, but I could see it.
Here's the thing. Outside of people playing teenagers, for the most part, people are cast somewhat around what their actual age is.
Right.
So, unless it's something like Riverdale, where it's a bunch of 27-year-olds playing 16-year-olds, I think everybody else is pretty close to who they actually are.
The legitimate best show on TV right now.
I love that show. Yeah, I absolutely love that show.
Riverdale, it's so good.
Don't judge us.
I do the River Raffle show on Thursdays.
I'm not saying anything at all.
So anyway, that whole conversation happens, and that was a really wonderful payoff. And yes, Daryl lies, which is a big move for him. I do think Melissa McBride will get drawn back in. Just like, hats off to Melissa McBride's acting chops.
Oh, amazing. She killed it tonight.
Something really interesting that happens with premium television nowadays with these big shows is that we forget, like, in the old days, a really high-profile movie would draw the top-billed talent. Like, you'd sometimes get, like, a movie star who wasn't the best actor, like a Jean-Claude Van Damme or something.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, if you were going to be in something dramatic and you got paid a lot of money and you were a top-billed person, you were a really good actor. And TV would have a lower tier of actors, usually. In this day and age, premium television gets really, really good actors. But Walking Dead didn't start out as that show. Mm-hmm. Walking Dead started out as a comic book adaptation that was kind of under budgeted, and they cast people who had some experience, but like Andrew Lincoln, for instance, was a relative unknown. Most of these actors were kind of like bit part character actors from TV and movies.
Yeah. Yep.
It's just like Melissa McBride is a fantastic actress, and she's great in the show, and most of that scene, she's sitting there, it's just a one shot on her. They're not cutting, and she's reacting to nothing. She's like, when she's asking if anything happened and did is everybody okay, and she's losing it. Oh my God, it was
What sold it for me with her, and it's something where there are the people that are the criers, and it's the obvious fake crying. She had like snot and mucus in those tears. That had some substance behind that.
If you watch some of the earlier episodes of the Walking Dead AfterBuzz show, we had Melissa McBride call in one time, and she was saying how she legitimately was not supposed to be past like the first two seasons. Yeah. I think it was like something very minimal. And to watch, like, you know, when I look, even I start binge watching like from the beginning of the first episodes to where we're at now, and to watch her, if I had to predict which character would still be, you know, season seven in,
outside of the main characters
on the original crew, I would have never guessed her. Mm-hmm. But she is like, she's like one of the strongest people on this show that I love watching every week, and the layers that she brings to this show is unbelievable.
I've said for the longest time, she's the best character on the show,
and she started as the weakest character.
Phenomenal to watch. Her development is like hands up for the writing for that show.
Again, how often do you see a middle-aged woman on a television show who is far and away like the strongest character?
She's not something
that TV does very often.
Mm-hmm. And I love Michonne, but Carol is a true badass. Oh, you know? I mean, don't get me wrong, Michonne is too, but they're different. You know, different. But where she came from to where she is now is to me.
We've all seen the gifs of Carol with like the Stallone Rambo body and Carol.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like literally, like, you know, we who've read the comics, we always pictured this strong second female character to always be Andrea, and then they did what they did with Andrea as a character and killed her off, thankfully. And it was like, well, was a new character gonna have to get introduced into that role? And instead they morphed somebody, like you said, that shouldn't have been past the first two seasons, and they did it great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's awesome. So
what I loved about this whole like Carol Darrell, other than it being like super nostalgic, they placed it right after her visit with Ezekiel too.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking like, oh, you know, I was really excited about their potential, you know, courtship happening, and then they bring in Darrell. I'm like, oh, now it's complicated. Yeah. Now I'm confused. Now I don't know what to feel anymore. But yeah,
I'm still not convinced with Ezekiel though. You know, I don't know. I'm not.
It could be so cute.
I need to see
just overall who he is.
He's
I don't
a
know.
Kitty.
You know,
I love
just,
it.
It doesn't feel like she's not really looking at him like he really has a shot.
No.
I don't really get the look
at
him.
He's got a winner over for sure.
Yeah.
I need to see him break the King character again.
Me too. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Like I feel like that was rushed a little bit, but I get why they did it when they did, because they needed to get her out of the kingdom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I want to see it again. I want to see that like with a Rick or with a Daryl.
Yeah.
Because nobody else has seen it other than Carol at this point.
Agreed.
Correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So basically the last scene is back at the kingdom. We have Daryl talking to Morgan about what's going on and the plan to get things going. And Daryl's like, you really need to work on Ezekiel, Morgan. You've got his ear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to mobilize against Negan, and Morgan still seems to be like,
can't be me.
No, he's just like, he's just sort of lifeless. He just doesn't know what it is with that guy. Like, he just doesn't seem to want to mobilize or understand the situation they're in, which is people are just going to keep dying.
Yeah.
People are just going to keep
dying. He's a pacifist.
Yeah, I would say that he's like the opposite of what a Rick is, you know? He is, I think that he legitimately wants to protect his community and keep everyone safe, but I think that he's scared. I feel like everything about him is sort of a facade, and I think he's trying to live up to that facade, but he's like secretly terrified.
Yeah,
and I think that's why he doesn't make any real moves at all. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's why his character sort of frustrates me a little bit right now. I'd like to see where it goes. I don't think he's like to see him with Carol. Like, I don't even want him to be with Carol because she's such a strong character.
Yeah.
So like I still need to see where he goes in the upcoming season before I'm convinced about him.
His relationship to Carol though is definitely one of the more interesting ones. They spent a really long time developing them sort of being at odds and her watching him from a distance.
Absolutely.
And I really like though that they sort of feel like in some ways they like really know each other better than most now, because he saved her life, but he also like respected her decision. Was like, I'll tell everybody, you know, you even said to Daryl, like, she just left, she's gone.
Yeah, she's gone, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was really, really cool. So I think that pretty much wraps up this episode.
No. There's one thing you didn't touch on that we did notice. At the confrontation with Rosita and Tara, they were talking about, oh, well, where are we going to find guns and stuff like that, and there was a very not subtle hint of Tara covering up her seashell bracelet.
Yeah. Yes, right, Oceanside,
Oceanside,
I think, I mean, definitely not so subtle. I think we've been calling that since it happened in the first place. Uh-huh. That was one of the more like beat you over the head obvious placements this show's ever had, which is like, these guns eventually are going to help fight the war. That's the only reason this whole thing just happened.
That's the whole reason for that episode to exist.
Yes, right. Absolutely. And also, we haven't talked about it for a long time. Heath is still just gone. We haven't seen him. He's never shown up. He wasn't a major enough character that him just like falling in the river and disappearing was something that we talk about every week, like Glenn dying.
It was kind of weird because I feel like there's something still unresolved about that.
He'll be
back. That you have to see. You either have to find out how he died or he has to be back. They can't just leave that as a lingering threat.
Well, he is back on 24 Legacy.
Thank you.
Damn it, Ben.
So anyway, guys, that pretty much wraps up the episode. Let's get into predictions.
There it is.
It's good to have you back, Daryl.
I'm happy to be back. I missed you guys.
So, predictions.
Predictions. No, it's fine. I was really enjoying the music and the lighting. For me, my prediction is Richard is going to take Daryl's advice, where he says, I die for the kingdom, and Daryl will say, then why don't you?
Okay.
And I think he is going to realize one of the final pieces to get Ezekiel to change his mind is he's going to have to get killed to save everybody else.
That's interesting.
He's going to essentially make himself a martyr to the kingdom.
My prediction is that with the Oceanside gun assault, whatever, they have to go get Oceanside's guns and try to get Oceanside on their side. A relevant character is going to die in that interaction because Oceanside's extremely hostile, and I don't think it's going to go that swimmingly. So it could be Rosita. They could be priming her to die. Feels a little too obvious. Feels like right now,
I don't think it would be her personally.
She's a little too aggro. Like maybe it's Tara. Maybe they kill Tara because
she came back.
Yeah, I guess. the part of me that thinks that they wouldn't do that is with the that whole rash of LGBTQ characters dying in the last year on TV, and there's been so much backlash against it. They already killed Denise, so maybe that doesn't happen. I'm just trying to think who it's going to be, but I do feel like one of our characters is going to die. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it'll be next week, but with the Oceanside interaction, someone I think gets taken out there.
Maybe Aaron.
Yeah, maybe it's Aaron. Yeah,
they hate dudes.
They do.
I actually think that we're going to lose Richard soon. I agree with like a couple people in the chat were actually saying this too. I think that we're going to lose Richard soon because he's kind of a character that's interesting to me. I'm starting to sort of like him in a weird way. I kind of want to figure out like what he's all about because he's so protective. Even though he was throwing Carol as the guinea pig, I feel like they're setting us up to kind of know more about him so he'll be chopped off
Game
the show.
Of Thrones. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I feel like. Because we're seeing a lot of him.
Of the characters within the kingdom that are going to set off, that would set things off, it's Benjamin's the kid. That to me is... Okay. The kid dies, and that's what sets Ezekiel off. That, to me, would be the most obvious.
I can see that.
I don't think Richard would set him off. I think he's seen Richard be enough of a hothead that I think he would sort of chalk that up to, like, that guy kind of had it coming, and I've protected his ass for a while. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think if Benjamin got taken out... That's, to me, the thing that makes Ezekiel mad enough to get going.
He has essentially adopted him as a kid. So.
Yeah, but yes.
I can see maybe Richard being the cause of Benjamin being taken out.
Yeah,
maybe.
Something in that reference.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, because I can see him being a hothead. Obviously, he didn't get what he wanted today with Daryl, so he might try something again, which might set off the war. I agree with you. I think one of our Alexandrians are going to go. I was thinking, Rosita, maybe Sasha? Only because I know the actress is on something else right now.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Cast a lead.
She's been really quiet this season. She has been quiet this half of the season. So that's kind of like where I wonder if, you know, kind of like we predicted Tara was going to die like two seasons ago. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh, well, they went quiet on her because they wanted to, it wasn't because they were going to kill her. It's like, if they're going quiet on somebody, they're actually in the safer group, I feel like.
Maybe it's Gabriel, because he just got redeemed. They tend to do that with characters. They'll kind of redeem someone and then take them out. That's that's a cycle the show likes to do.
Most people in the chat are saying Carol, actually.
No.
I just...
Bad
chat. There's been several people saying Carol. Well, like, Javier Guantanilla.
We've said for a really, really long time that the four unkillable characters, like, the four unkillable characters in the show, you can't kill Rick, you can't kill...
Carl.
I don't think you can kill Carol.
I think you can. If we can kill Glenn and we can kill... I think we can kill Carol. I think we can.
I think we can kill Carl.
I think we can kill Carl, too.
Super effective you can't kill Judith.
Affect Rick?
No, that's just bad. No, that's just bad Judith. TV. That's just like, I got to stop watching Walking Dead.
Carol, you can't kill Maggie, I think Carol.
Maggie
at this point. Mm-hmm.
Maggie's maybe unkillable.
Because Glenn's gone.
Yeah, but they're not going to do Maggie and Glenn. I could see Carol, though, because there's so much...
Yeah.
Build up around her character, and we've fallen in love with her character. Well, obviously, some people in the chat have not fallen in love with her.
Well, no, here's the thing. They may love her as much as we do, but it's not a bad point that she could be killed. Nobody's saying they want her dead.
Right.
But she could be dead.
I mean, this is Walking Dead. Anybody is dispensable at any point.
I think Carol's a stretch. Guys, we're going to get into one last bit of the show, and that is going to be a quick comic book discussion. So where can the folks find you guys in case they don't want to hear that? This is your warning. We're going to give our sign-offs, and then we're going to talk for about 2 minutes. Daryl, where can the folks find you?
You can find me at Daryl Christen, DerrialChriston, and at BlackHollywoodLive.com, our sister company.
And you guys can find me at Susanna_Kim, SusannaH_Kim.
The John Carl, THEJOHNCARLE, and also Whiskey and Waffles on YouTube.
You guys can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram. Consider this your warning. Can we get a quick spoiler alert?
You need lights.
They're there.
Spoiler alert.
There we go.
Lights.
So this will be very quick. Last chance.
It's actually not very spoilery either. It's just...
No, there's really not much.
It's just reference-y.
Yeah.
Reference alert.
Later in the comic book, there's a group called the Whisperers that show up, and they're basically people that wear zombie skins. They skin zombies, and they wear their skins, so they can talk. When you first see them, they're holding knives and stuff. You think that they're zombies with knives. It happens after the time jump we've talked about before.
Okay.
I don't know if they're ever going to go there. I'm actually doing the PaleyFest Walking Dead panel, so I'll get to talk to the cast this year in like a few weeks, and Kirkman, and I'll hopefully get to talk to him about that a little bit, see if he can give me any information on that. But
he'll totally spoil the show for a guy he just met.
I know. But anyway, that's the thing that happens later, and so the leader of that group is called Alpha, and she's like this super, super like A-type personality, kind of soulless, like
does some really, really deplorable stuff.
Speaks in a really, like, interesting way, similar to what Jadis...
She reminds me a lot of Jadis, was the point. Okay. And so with them introducing the scavengers and the way they dress and the way they are so kind of uniform, made me feel like if they were to introduce the Whisperers in the way that they do in the comics, it would be a little bit redundant.
Yeah, I mean, I originally was, like, just waiting for her name to get said, because I was actually... Are they just going to say her name is Alpha?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with the fact that other people had names and stuff like that, as the scene played out further, I kept stepping away from that because, spoilers for you guys, sorry, the Whisperers, only Alpha has a name. Everybody else doesn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, you are the Alpha. So anyway, we'll see if they do that. I don't know if the show's going to do that, but that was the one thing, if you're a comic book fan, you were wondering if we noticed the same thing. We did.
Yeah.
Aside from that, pretty much this episode was...
The problem is we're catching up to the comic book faster than the comic could get ahead now.
Yeah, like, the comic is...
The comic is at the Whisperer War right now.
Yes, so the comic has...
So that's maybe, a season down the line if we go to the Whisperers?
The comic has resolved the Negan conflict
and
moved the time jump, and then it's on basically the next major war. Yep. So if they were to follow the comic book, they're going to finish the Negan story, which I think is this season, probably.
I think you have to get to a pretty definitive point in this war. I don't know if it's the full-on end, but... I think if you draw it out another full season, it's going to be really draggy.
Yeah, so I'd be surprised.
Yeah.
I actually asked a question in the chat about what their overall rating was for the episode, and most people are saying like 7 to 8.
Yeah, I would agree with
super strong
7.5 to 8.
I'm gonna give it 7.5.
If a 10's a perfect episode, then yeah, I think this is a high 7. This was a really enjoyable episode.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Close to an 8 for me. So that pretty much does it, guys. Thank you so much for watching. Thanks for listening if you're on audio. And we will be back same time, same place next week to compete with the Oscars. Watch us instead. bye, guys. Take care.
Peace.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.